Now, legal scholars are now calling for the introduction of strong regulations, and one of them is Kara Meiring from the dispute resolution practice at commercial law firm Cliff Dagger Hofmeyr. She now joins us on the line to help us canvass this subject. Kara, welcome to Africa of the Future.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, cryptocurrencies were meant to be a breakaway from the shackles of, you know, highly regulated currency market. What has gone wrong?
So I think, you know, it's not necessarily that one specific thing has gone wrong in the crypto markets as a whole. I think it's something that's still very new, or at least relatively new. And to a large extent, people are still finding their feet in terms of how to engage with the crypto markets. And also a lot of companies who are now issuing specific types of cryptocurrencies, they themselves are still finding their feet in terms of, you know, what the best way is to make sure that their specific cryptocurrency is one that is trusted by the market, and is one that would not crash, you know, as what happened with UST.
Now, do you think there's a healthy appreciation for the risk that is involved in trading the crypto currencies in the market?
I think perhaps to a certain extent. So, you know, you have your more experienced traders who are very, very acutely aware of the fact that a lot of cryptocurrencies are extremely volatile. There's, you know, a lot of them know that they could wake up the next morning and half of their portfolio could have been wiped out. But then at the same time, you've got people who are just entering the market who don't have as much experience trading and who don't necessarily understand the nuances of how cryptocurrencies work or the trading behind it. And I think those types of investors don't always appreciate, you know, the fact that potentially you could lose half your investment portfolio overnight. And these are also the types of investors who you would then want to perhaps rather invest in something like stablecoins, which is supposed to be a more stable, I mean, the name says it, a more stable coin where you shouldn't be seeing large fluctuations in the value of your investment portfolio. Rather, it's more, you know, a stable growing portfolio, which is something that a lot of people want in their, yeah, in their investment portfolios.
Now, speaking of volatility, I mean, the UST crashed in May after enjoying quite a healthy run at the top. Have we been able to pinpoint exactly what was the cause of that? And particularly talking about volatility, and it was one of those, you know, coins that was seen as stable and therefore not, you know, prone to those fluctuations that we've seen in the past in from coins such as Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I think people always say, you know, in hindsight, everything becomes clear. And in hindsight, there should probably have been some kind of expectation that something like this would happen. The one reason being that UST is slightly different from other stable coins. So other stable coins are pegged to a fiat currency, most commonly the US dollar. So for every coin that you have, you would also somewhere in a, you know, in a virtual safe or whatever, you would actually have $1 to match that coin, and that is what keeps the price stable. However, with UST, they use a kind of algorithm where they would trade a token called Luna for UST based on the, you know, raising and falling of the price. So I think that was the first issue, that there was never actually a large amount of US dollars that was kept somewhere in reserves to back UST. Then I think the second thing that went wrong is because of, you know, a lack of regulation in the market, and this is something that can happen with any kind of cryptocurrency where the currency itself isn't as large as say, Bitcoin or Ethereum, and you've got players in the market who own, you know, massive percentages of the actual cryptocurrency. So anything that they do or decisions that they make has the ability to influence the markets to a great extent. So what happened with UST, it seems, is that a bunch of what we call whales, so it's people who have specifically large amounts of a specific cryptocurrency, either decided together to withdraw a bunch of UST, or it just happened by chance and as a result of, you know, other things in the market, the crash happened. So people aren't sure whether it was a coordinated attack in the sense that these whales decided to specifically withdraw their money so that the price would start falling, or that it just happened that they, you know, decided it was the best investment strategy for them to withdraw a bunch of these coins. But in the current markets, for example, with the JSE, a large investor, the regulations don't allow them to do that. So I think that is specifically an example of where regulation could have potentially prevented something like this from happening.
Now, you've made quite a strong case for, you know, strong regulation and oversight on cryptocurrencies. And one of the things that you say that the stable coins should be the first ones to be regulated. Why do you think this is the case? Isn't this the antithesis of what the cryptocurrencies were all about to begin with?
So, I mean, yes, a very big drawing point for cryptocurrencies is the fact that it is decentralized, that there isn't a lot of regulation around it. But I think definitely there's an argument to be made for, you know, something in the middle where it is not necessarily regulated by only one specific country or one specific government authority, but where there's perhaps, you know, cooperation between different countries and different companies. Everyone who wants to have a semi-decentralized type of currency, but also one that has some kind of regulatory oversight in order to protect investors and to protect consumers. And the reason that I think a stablecoin is a good candidate for something like this is because of the fact that people rely on the stability. That's one of the things that people look to stablecoins for. They look to it for being less volatile, more stable. And the types of companies, you know, new tech startups who build their technology based on or who build their products based on the technology behind a certain stablecoin also rely on the fact that that coin is actually going to be, you know, to a certain extent stable. So I think everyone who sees the benefits of stablecoins would, to a certain extent, want some form of regulation to ensure that that stability that they rely on is actually somehow maintained.
On the line, we are joined by Kara Meiring. She's from the dispute resolution practice at commercial law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyer. She's joining us on the line here on Africa of the Future. We want to take a short break, and on the other side of that, we continue our conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this.
Have you ever asked yourself, what on earth am I here for?
When God placed his image in us, he placed a sense of eternity within us.
What is my purpose in life?
I was made for greatness. I just don't know what it is. But I was made for greatness.
Life by Design explores the journey of people from around the continent who live a life of purpose. They share their experience on how they discovered what they were meant to do. Join me, Amanda Machaga, every Monday at 8:05 Central African Time for your weekly dose of Monday motivation only on Channel Africa, The African Perspective.
Life by Design. Be the architect of your life.
Change Your Game is a weekly entrepreneurial program that targets entrepreneurs, especially youth, on the African continent.
Last year, Google named me as one of the brightest young minds in the world.
The program seeks to portray various opportunities and options that are available for entrepreneurs.
I came up with the way for the world not to pass.
It focuses and highlights real issues concerning entrepreneurship.
There are so many people whose potential is still untapped.
At Change Your Game, we believe entrepreneurs are the key drivers of tomorrow's African innovations and essential to creating a thriving African economy. Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future. This week on the show, we are speaking about calls for more regulation, really, of cryptocurrencies. And joining us to help us tackle this subject is Kara Meiring from the dispute resolution practice at commercial law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyer. Now, earlier on, we spoke about stable coins. What really sets them apart from your other, you know, coins that are available on the market?
So as I've mentioned previously, the idea behind stable coins is that they would be pegged to a certain kind of asset, like a fiat currency. And most commonly what we see is that these stable coins are pegged to the US dollar. So what that means is that if you are a company that issues a type of stable coin, then for every coin that you issue, you would actually need to have $1 worth of, well, $1 for each coin that you issue. And what that does is it ensures that the price of the stable coin doesn't fluctuate as much as, for example, Bitcoin or Ethereum or Litecoin, because you always know that for every 5 coins that you have, you will definitely be able to exchange them for $5. So the uncertainty that comes with other cryptocurrencies, you don't necessarily have that when it comes to stable coins.
Kara, I want to play the devil's advocate here. And if the people who invest in these cryptocurrencies know the risks that are associated with doing so, Why should the authorities care?
So, I mean, I think there's a few issues here. But the first one is that people don't always know the extent of the risk that they are taking. So, you know, because there's very little regulation and very little understanding sometimes of how these markets work, people are just generally sometimes uninformed. So you would have a cryptocurrency and their website has certain information on it. Sometimes it's not in language that everyone understands. And sometimes they just don't disclose all of the necessary information about the specific coin that they're issuing. So where you have, for example, in South Africa, the Consumer Protection Act that has certain regulations in terms of what must you tell a consumer about a product that they're purchasing in order to protect the consumer, you just don't have something similar when it comes to cryptocurrencies. So I think sometimes it just is that people just don't have access to the information that they need to make an informed decision.
What dangers, if any, do cryptos pose on the traditional currency market and the broader financial systems of the world?
I mean, that's an interesting question because I don't think necessarily that it poses dangers per se. I think if cryptocurrency becomes a type of currency that people honestly, you know, trust and think is a more efficient way of doing trade and business internationally, then maybe it would somehow overtake fiat currencies. But I don't think that's necessarily dangerous because if it is something that there's broad scale adoption of and people, you know, see the benefits to it, then perhaps that is the way to go. But on the other hand, of course, I think that's going to be 10, 20 years from now. So I don't think there's any immediate or dangers for that matter necessarily to, you know, our greatest idea of using fiat currency.
Now, one of the things that are said by the purveyors of the, you know, high risk, high reward mantra is that the traditional financial systems are quite in denial about the expected longevity of the cryptocurrencies. And perhaps they still wish that they could just go away and things could get back to, you know, normal, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. So I think when, for example, when Bitcoin first came out, people kind of thought it was a bit of a joke and a bit of a meme. And I mean, some of these cryptocurrencies are a meme. Dogecoin, for example, literally came from, you know, it's based on a meme. But I think what we've definitely seen over the past few years is that cryptocurrencies are here to stay. And especially if you understand the technology on which they are based on and the value of that technology that underlines, you know, the blockchain upon which they are built, I think then people will be a lot more confident about the fact that these cryptocurrencies aren't going anywhere. Perhaps some of them, you know, will die off or crash, and that will just show you that perhaps those weren't made to last. But a currency like, for example, Bitcoin or Ethereum that's been around the block, sure, they're still very volatile and, you know, anything can happen. But I think, you know, from what we've seen, these cryptocurrencies are here to stay, and it's important, I think, that the financial institutions start to recognize that.
Kara, I want us to take another short break, and on the other side of that, I want us to wrap up our conversation. You're still with Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. Stay with us. We're back after this.
This is Africa's best sport destination, Africa at Play, where there are stars, legends, and the principals of the game. Kenyan athlete Eliud Kipchoge is here, the first man in the history to complete a marathon under 2 hours. South African golden girl Caster Semenya, Sadio Mane, one of Africa's best footballers, CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe, Dr. Tiangwa, COSAFA President is also present, reigning world rugby champs Springboks, plus the tall height around us, that's African basketballers, Cecilia Molokwani, African netball president, volleyball, cricket, golf, tennis, boxing, and swimming, all represented.
Catch Africa at Play with sports from an African perspective. Live every Saturday and Sunday from 1900 hours to 2000 hours Central African Time on DSTV Audio Bouquet, Channel 802, or streamed live on channelafrica.co.za. Africa at Play.
Join Channel Africa every Tuesday at 8 a.m. CAT for another informative installment of Africa of the Future. You can find us online at www.channelafrica.co.za or Channel 802 on the DSTV Audio Bouquet channel. Channel Africa, giving you the African perspective.
Kaja is not only for the retired, neither is it for the feeble. It is the backbone of African development. Join me, Sydney Kapingapiri, every Wednesday from 9:05 to 9:45 a.m. Central African Time for your developmental stories on African agriculture. Agro-Africa on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. We are at the latter end of our conversation with Kara Meiring from the dispute resolution practice at commercial law firm Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. Now, Kara, do you think there's a willingness to see through your call for greater regulation of cryptos? How has the response been like?
So, I mean, I think that internationally there definitely has been a movement towards at least some form of regulation. So earlier this year, we had a statement from the U.S. President Joe Biden where he called for inputs from a lot of different government authorities in how they think they should go, the country should go about potentially imposing some form of regulation on cryptocurrencies. Specifically with the UST crash, there's been unconfirmed reports, but it seems like the SEC is potentially embarking on an investigation into the crash to see whether, you know, what could have been done to actually protect investors and consumers and to prevent something like this from happening in the future. In South Africa specifically, we haven't seen, specific big movements towards regulation. What I think would probably be important is just as a starting point to gather more information and to get a better understanding of how these markets work and what beneficial regulations we can impose. Because I think, to be clear, we don't need stringent regulation and over-regulation of the market. I think one of the fantastic things about cryptocurrencies is the fact that it has been able to get this far without any, you know, overt intervention from the government or from, you know, the legislation. But I think there has to be some kind of balance where you have this free and decentralized system, but you also have a level of oversight to ensure that the individuals like you and me are protected from, you know, potentially losing a large part of our investment.
In doing my research about this subject, one of the gray areas that I found was the fact that the fees for transacting in cryptocurrencies are quite a gray area and are not quite set in stone, no?
Yeah. So, I mean, how transaction fees, there's two ways in which transaction fees can work. So what you have on the one hand is, for example, a company like Luno in South Africa, they charge a specific, I think it's about 2.5%, I stand to be corrected, transaction fee on each trade, not on each trade that you make, but if you buy Bitcoin through them, then they charge you a transaction fee. And that fee essentially is to cover the potential price difference between in the price of Bitcoin between when you bought it and when they actually are able to, you know, give you the Bitcoin. So that's a standard kind of fee that's very nice and transparent, and you can see how much you need to put in order to make a trade on, for example, Luno. Then the other types of fees you have, each platform can charge their own specific fees, but there's also fees that you sometimes have to pay to the miners. So say, for example, you're buying Bitcoin, if you offer the person who mines the Bitcoin a higher fee, there's a more likely chance of your transaction going through and going through faster. So, there's a lot of variation in terms of the fees that you could potentially be charged to buy or sell these cryptocurrencies. I think, you know, most of the time these are relatively transparent. So the platform that you're trading on would tell you, okay, we charge this percentage fee to make a trade. What sometimes is not as transparent is how much, what kind of transaction fee you would pay in order for your transaction to actually go through, i.e. whether a miner will accept your transaction for the fee that you're offering him to mine the block and add your transaction to that block.
Now let's talk about the exchange rates. Let's talk about the transacting fees. Let's talk about the fees that are involved when one is transferring money from another, and particularly considering the currency values of different regions and different countries. Mm. How has cryptocurrency been affected by this, if at all?
So, I mean, I don't I'm not actually sure that I'm qualified to answer that question, because I'm not sure that the cryptocurrencies necessarily are that affected by, you know, exchange rates in different countries, especially if it's trades between different types of cryptos. So where price differences would come in is if the whole price of Bitcoin has fallen or, you know, risen because of a fluctuation in the US dollar, but that being because of the markets in the US improving or not improving. I'm not sure that there's a direct correlation necessarily between the exchange rates of, you know, fiat currencies and those of cryptocurrencies. Unless, of course, it's where a stable coin is pegged to, for example, the US dollar, then, of course, changes in the US dollar would have a direct impact on the price of the stable coin.
Now, with the fall of the UST in May, there have been fears that perhaps the UST will also go the way of Bitcoin in terms of volatility, because Bitcoin at some stage, they also enjoyed quite a, you know, fruitful spell at the top, and, you know, everyone was happy with the returns, and then suddenly, boom, it's all gone. Are we likely to see the same thing here? Has the trust waned in the UST as a stable coin?
I don't see necessarily the UST coin recovering from this. There are some movements where people are trying to, you know, invest money into making sure that the coin refines its peg to the US dollar. At the moment, I don't really see that happening, but, you know, well, that 100% depends on what happens in the market. I think what we have seen, though, is that the more kind of mainstream cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, you know, it's very clear that they're not going to go the way of UST. So I don't see them crashing the way that UST crashed, just because of the large, like, market capitalization of those cryptocurrencies. And also UST was kind of a strange one, given that, you know, there was no real backing behind it. And it was kind of a bizarre chain of events that led to this UST crash.
Now, at the back of everything that we've spoken about, Kara, you've made a case, obviously, as I said earlier on, that you'd like to see some regulation and oversight take place. What shape should this oversight take place? Please break it down for us.
That's a difficult one. And I think that's the thing that everyone is really still trying to figure out. And the reason why it's so difficult is because of the decentralized nature of the crypto markets. It's very difficult for one country to go and say, well, we're going to implement these kinds of regulations and to actually implement them, because these transactions are happening, you know, on the blockchain. There's no specific country who necessarily has jurisdiction over someone's wallet when they hold their cryptocurrencies or over these transactions. So I think an example potentially of something to do would be to say, well, in South Africa, if you want to offer your product to South African citizens, then you have to comply with our Consumer Protection Act, in that you have to make it very clear to them what product it is they're investing in, what are they buying, what are those transaction fees, and what recourse do they potentially have if something goes wrong. So I think the focus should be on what we can control at this point, and that would definitely be the things that South Africans consume. But then at the same time, you have to be careful, because you don't want to close the South African, you know, you don't want to close South African citizens off to being able to actually access these international markets and these different types of cryptocurrencies, because I think that would, you know, at the same time, not be very beneficial to South Africans. So you have to find a fine balance between, you know, coming up with ways to protect citizens, but at the same time not closing off their access to the crypto market. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I think the starting point is just to have more conversations about it, to have people sitting around the table having open and frank discussions, and also perhaps, you know, getting some public opinion on the matter, people who specifically are invested in cryptocurrencies or who, you know, have experience trading in it. I think insights from them would be particularly useful in what we can do to make the market a safer place.
Definitely a conversation that is worth having again in the future. Kara, thank you so much for taking time to join us here on Africa of the Future.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great.
Africa of the Future.
Africa of the Future.
That is Kara Meiring from the dispute resolution practice at commercial law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyer. And that's how we come to the end of this week's edition of Africa of the Future. Your Econ and Sport is up next. Stay tuned for that and more here on Channel Africa, where we continue to broadcast from an African perspective. Until next time, my name is Luyanda Maume, and I'm out.
Shout.